Welcome back. You're listening to Suddenly I See, a gender toolkit for the Smithers, BC area on CICK 93.9 FM. I'm Christine Bruce, going solo in the host seat today. However, I do have a very special guest. I want to introduce you to Laszlo's mother, Regan Polgar. Regan has the unique perspective of knowing Laszlo from birth. In fact, she was there at the conception and watching their journey as a genderqueer person. We'll be breaking this conversation into two episodes, which we've called Genderqueer Kids and Transitioning. Regan and I will discuss what it means to be genderqueer and some of the many complications, social, emotional, medical, and political, that accompany being genderqueer, particularly around transitioning. It's a meaty conversation, and I'm guessing Regan won't be mincing words. In this world, there's a hugely diverse spectrum of people who are genderqueer, people whose gender falls outside society's narrow binary understanding of male and female. I imagine becoming self-aware and realizing your gender identity doesn't align with the sex you were assigned at birth. I mean, that happens not infrequently, right? Mm-hmm. And that must bring up some strong emotions, eh, Regan? When I understand your own gender doesn't fall within the narrow strictures of our society.
Yeah. I definitely would say gender nonconforming. Like, I got called a tomboy and stuff a lot as a kid. And I know a lot of people are really comfortable with being called that. But to me, it also made me uncomfortable just because it still had this sort of gender implication to it. So for me personally, gender doesn't really make sense. I am a mother and I was born a woman, and I'm comfortable with being a cis woman when it comes to like my sex. But as far as gender expression goes, from very early in my life, it's always felt 100% performative. And I don't mind performing any of it until it's expected of me. And then once it starts becoming expected of me, it starts to become like a chore, like a job. Like, I have to do this to earn favor, to earn my place in society. And if I don't do this, then I'm cast out of that society. And the thing is that we also cast out abusers, rapists, and murderers. And I understand why we cast them out. I understand why we keep them out of our safe circles, because they're not safe people to have in your safe circle. But when you're also casting out somebody because they're gay or bi or not gender conforming, that's who you're casting them to. I have to perform this in order to not be. That's when it has become a chore to me. That's when it becomes exhausting. I think it can be fun to express ourselves and express our gender, but when it's expected, then it feels like a threat.
So yeah. Then what did it feel when you realized that Laszlo was genderqueer also?
It was terrifying. I definitely had an idea, like, long before he came out to me. Like, you're a mom and you
want to protect, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah. And he was also very young when he was exploring this within himself. I was terrified. I was terrified. I can understand why it might have been easier for him to explore this. I've never really had a safe or guaranteed spot inside the circles of society. I was like out as a bisexual person from a very young age, like in the 90s. I've been diagnosed autistic since my 20s. That's your normal. You get comfortable with that, right? And so because you're already used to being able to kind of keep yourself safe in that outsider zone, so we're kind of already in that zone, we already don't have that safety to lose. So it becomes more comfortable to like think about other things and to explore other things, because it's not, again, what else is there to lose? We're already outside the safe circle of society. So I can understand why that happens more often with people in our situation. And why through me that Laszlo was able to explore that more within himself, and especially at a younger age. But it was terrifying, because also I've been outside that circle for so long, and there was...
You give up a lot of things, don't you?
Yeah, like, yeah, you're, and it's not even necessarily that you're giving it up, because no matter what you're doing, you're having to give up something.
Yeah.
You feel alone in a room full of people, because it's not really you. Right? So how can you really connect anybody here? Because it's not really you here. It's this performance that you're putting on for people to accept you so that you can have some safety. Mm-hmm. But then when you are really you, you have to be hypervigilant all the time. So it also doesn't really feel like you. And just that world, it's hard and it's tiring, and there's a lot that comes along with it. And I was scared when I first saw that, yeah, this is my kid, this is our world. And of course, like, it makes sense for him to be able to explore this. And I've never felt particularly akin to gender expression, especially when it's expected. So naturally, I'm probably more likely to have children who would feel the same way. But it still scared me at the same time, especially when you know firsthand. just how scary it can be.
Yeah.
And the things that can go wrong. And that when it goes wrong, the people that are inside that safety circle are going to use you as an example of, this is why you conform.
Yeah.
You don't want to end up like them.
Yeah. So I want to turn to genderqueer kids in the spotlight. There's a meme going around Facebook that reads, you didn't hear about people being transgender until recently. And then the response is, you didn't hear about Antarctica until 1920, but it was probably there the whole time. And there's a lot of evidence of children living in self-identified genders as early as the 1930s. But at the time, there was no language to describe the experience. So people either used what they knew or they lived invisibly. And I suspect a lot of us were oblivious to this experience, like I was, because the institutions that I existed in at the time, the Catholic Church, the Catholic school system, a conservative government, none of those things would ever concede that life could be non-binary. And furthermore, as a child, if it was an uncomfortable conversation, we just didn't talk about it. For instance, when I was a small child, I asked my mom why my Barbie had bumps on the front. And she said it was to make her clothes fit better. And that was my birds and the bees talk. That was it. Sum total. I had to go to the library and find out what the kids in my class were teasing me about.
Yeah.
Right? And I was about as binary as you can get. Mm-hmm. So I was never exposed to these things. So imagine if there's literally no words to describe your gender and you're living in that sort of society, that culture. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were living under the radar, like Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not seeing Laszlo do that, which I really admire, because that takes a lot of courage to show up and say, yeah, I'm Antarctica and I'm here. You know?
Yeah. Well, I like how you said that, like, I'm Antarctica and I'm here. But it feels almost more like Antarctica was always there and there were some people who were brave enough to go and check it out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was always being talked about. It's just, it was always talked about in that same way that I was explaining just now, that it was a threat. Oh, you don't want to end up like those people. Careful what you say around your children, because they pick up on everything, and they do. So you might not remember it, but I'm sure there was probably some conversation between adults being had while you were playing with your Barbies on the ground, and they were talking about somebody who something bad had happened to. And whether you realize it's a conscious thought or not, as a kid, that does become a part of you. And these things were being talked about.
Well, in whispers.
I remember when
Boris Karloff got cancer, everybody in my family whispered about it.
Yeah.
Like it was this thing that you didn't, if you spoke too loudly, you might get cancer yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So it's like, that's a good way of putting it. It's like, people are like, oh, well, we never used to talk about this. And I'm like, but you sure whispered a lot.
Yeah.
So like, it really was always there, but we were whispering about it. And it might be hard for people to transition into the stage where we're talking about it more now instead of whispering about it more. And I'm sure that seems very alarming to them to have to go from one thing to another. But that's kind of what we're talking about, isn't it? About how it's difficult to go from one thing to another. So then maybe they can understand that going from one form of gender expression to an entirely different form of gender expression, or to change sex entirely from what you were assigned at birth to what you feel and what you are, that's a big transition. We're at this pioneering stage, we're at this transition stage where people aren't whispering about it, they're talking about it now. And where the first people are going out into Antarctica and traversing it and finding it. These are the pioneers of something. The first time that you do something, you're the worst you will ever will be at it. And the same goes, and the more you do it, the better you get at it. And the same goes for us as a collective human species. The first time our collective human species pioneers out into something, those people that pioneer out, that's not the highways that we pave one day.
No, they're going to make mistakes.
Exactly. Yeah. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to fail along the way. They're going to learn through their failures. There's going to be problems that happen, and then you figure it out and you go along. We go out and we see, and we figure it out when we get there. If you're looking for something really negative, you're going to be able to find it. And if you're putting positivity out there, then you're going to be able to find it.
Lee makes a really strong argument in the book about having a conversation on transition too. And I want to make this point because I think we really need to be faced with this for a couple of minutes. Lee says, transition can sometimes feel like this is the only topic that cisgender people really want to know about, and that transition is just shorthand for information about extremely personal parts of our bodies. Why the fixation? Why do we think we know about someone when we think we know about, well, let's be honest, their junk?
Yeah.
After all, most of the time, gender plays out in everyday life with everyone's clothes on. I don't need to see a vulva before saying, she and her pronouns, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And even if a person has a vulva, maybe those are not the pronouns that that person wants. Mm-hmm. So I love these comments because they make me realize that I've fallen into those traps and I need to back away from them mm-hmm. and let the other person lead mm-hmm. when it comes to things like gendering. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We need to give each other enough grace to make their own decisions yeah. about who they are.
Yeah. I think it also kind of ties a bit back into the whole, like, when people are getting really personal and private with that, and when they're, like, being intrusive in that way, there are people around you who are trans and not out yet. There are people around you who are intersex and have never been out about it. There's a percentage of the world that's intersex even, and it's really similar to the percentage in the world that's ginger, that has red hair. And we all know lots of people that have red hair. And so when people are out here and you see somebody and they're like, and you've got two people talking about like, oh, well, are they going to go and mutilate their genitals? And there's somebody around that's hearing that. And they're deciding to not be that tall poppy that's going to get cut down by you next. Yeah. So maybe the reason people are like, oh, we're not seeing that much of it, is because like, because there isn't that acceptance. Yeah. I don't know. I kind of have a rule that I'm like, if you don't have the kind of relationship where you can comfortably talk about your bowel movements with somebody, then you don't have the kind of relationship where you can be asking them about their private parts, right. period.
Right. And I don't have that relationship with Laszlo, despite yeah. being really close with them.
Yeah.
I've spent a lot of time having some pretty personal conversations yeah. over the last few months. And honestly, we've never gotten that close. And mm-hmm. I respect that mm-hmm. because that's how I'm going to keep Laszlo as a friend. If I can show some respect. Mm-hmm. And you know, Laszlo's never asked me either.
Interestingly. yeah. Not everybody is going to be best friends in that way, right?
Well, and I mean, like, I don't think we need to go that direction yeah. very often, though. It's yeah. so seldom that we need a relationship where we need to be able to talk, like,
about anything, yeah. right? When you do find somebody that you can talk to about anything, it's so special because that isn't everybody. Yeah. That's the whole idea, yeah, right?
That's the point.
And so then it's kind of contradictory when you have people who can understand that and then are like, well, I want to know about your gender transition and I want to know what your private parts look like.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, shouldn't it be the same the other way around? If you over ask and then you get offended when I'm like, well, you can't be asking about my son's genitals. And they're like, oh, well, I have a right to know.
I mean, when my kids were little, I remember a couple of times people saying, you have to hug me. And I said, they don't have to
no,
do anything.
No, absolutely. I have the
and
same rule.
And we do
rule,
have
yeah.
those situations mm-hmm. in life where we have to monitor each other's social behaviors mm-hmm. because somebody's overstepped the mark. Mm-hmm. And this, I think, is one of those yeah. where you don't have the right to ask somebody about no. their junk.
Yeah, right? And I like that too with the kids thing and like with hugging. Because I think that when it comes to trans and kids issues, there is this interesting intersection as well that people don't really respect kids.
And I think we need to be better at self-policing those moments.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's important that we all set boundaries and people mm-hmm. respect those boundaries. Yeah. So I want to go on to social transition. Regan, you probably know so much more about this topic than I could ever know. The book offers a list of ways that people might transition socially, which helped me understand what we were talking about. So I'm going to throw a whole list at you and you can okay. pick two or three that you really want to talk about. Here are the socially transitioned identifiers that the book offers. Names, pronouns and labels, clothing, makeup, hair, which includes wigs, packers, stand to pee devices, breast forms, binders, tucks and gaffs, hip and butt padding, body modifications like tattoos and piercing, and adding and removing body hair. Mm-hmm. Those are all ways that you're basically hanging a shingle that says, this is my gender expression.
Yeah.
And those can change from day to day, right?
Yeah, and cis people do this all as well.
Right.
That's exactly sure the thing, do. Right? Like, yeah. there's plenty of men that go and get hair plugs because it makes them feel more masculine.
Elon Musk.
right? right? And, like, and there's plenty of women that go and they get, like, breast reductions or implants or whatever. It makes sense to me because this gender expression is a big part of. And I believe other people about themselves. When somebody's telling me about themselves, I believe them. And when they tell me that it's important for them to express their gender in a certain way, I believe them. Whether they're cis, whether they're trans, whether they're gender nonconforming, whatever the case may be, I'm going to believe that a person knows themselves better than I know mm-hmm. them. I'm going to believe that they know what they need better than I know. because they're the ones living their lives.
Yep.
And I've heard from a lot of people where they're like, well, if it was me, then I would do this. If it was you in that situation, you would be them. And we already know what you would do because they're already doing it. If you were them, you would have all their lives, their whole experience, all of their memories, everything that's inside of them, you would be them. And so you would be doing exactly what they're doing because that's the knowledge they have. That's the path they're on and that's who they are. And that's kind of that part of that over sort of over empathy, like people are trying to empathize and putting themselves in somebody else's shoes, but then they forget to decenter themselves. And it's just them wearing somebody else's shoes instead of them actually really putting themselves as that person with that person's memories and that person's experiences and the life that that person is actually living.
Right. It takes a long time to understand what a person has been through and how they got to the journey that they got to get to where they are today.
Yeah. And really for like true empathy to happen, I really do think people need to learn how to decenter themselves more.
Mm-hmm.
You need to take yourself out of that equation because it's not you.
I love some of these options. The names, for instance.
Yeah.
I love that when somebody chooses a different name for themselves.
Yeah.
But when we have trouble, there's a lot of memes going around right now about, for instance, I've changed my name, what, 3 times? When I was a kid, everybody called me Chris because that's what my parents called me. I got older and everybody called me Christine.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was Mrs. Bruce. I've changed my, and people have respected that. Yeah. I mean, sure, occasionally you'll get one or two people right at the beginning say, oh, that's going to be a lot of work. Yeah. Well, you're right, it is. But if you respect me, you will make that effort.
Yeah.
And there are times where, again, the pronouns, we have both made mistakes with somebody else's pronouns, with each other's pronouns.
Yeah.
And we laugh and we say, oh, I've done it again.
Because I think that's so normal. It's the same thing as like accidentally calling your kid by the other kid's name.
Right.
I've done it with the dog and my kid, right? Right? And I think that's just like, because we're fallible human beings.
It's a thing.
And
but you just laugh or you just apologize and you move on.
Yeah.
And these are really valuable conversations because I think this demonstrates how much we respect and how much we want other people in our lives. And we want the color that they bring to our lives.
Mm-hmm.
If we can demonstrate that we're making that effort and we're going to keep making that effort.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then it's the same thing. It's that like the people that are around you that are hidden, the people that are staying undercover, they're going to see that. And that's going to help to give them the confidence to be more open. Maybe.
I would like to think that we're being that accepting in our society and that we're being as obvious about it, that it does give people confidence to be themselves.
Yeah.
Because we have a much stronger community when everybody's feeling good about themselves.
Yeah. And I think human beings do their best work when we work collectively and when we work together and when we collaborate on things. Like, I think that's where we've had the greatest human achievements has been when we're working collectively and when we're collaborating. And it just seems to me like that we get the best work when there is an opportunity for everybody to have a seat at the table and to have a voice. And then you see that representation passed down onto the other people who might not have been able to feel like they had a voice before. And now you've got more.
It's beautiful when everybody feels good about it.
It doesn't have to be this hard.
No, right?
Yeah.
I understand why people do it. If you're afraid, if you're insecure of something, then you're going to lash out.
Mm-hmm.
But when you lash out, you just let me know something about yourself,
mm-hmm.
that you're insecure or
deeply
scared.
Insecure,
and so then I want to, okay, how do we make you feel better about yourself so that you can make other people feel better about themselves?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we all have to help each other to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think we should probably point out that several of these things on this list are the kinds of items that are personal and that you should not be asking about.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Have you got a packer in there?
Like,
you know, that's not really any of your,
right?
It's kind of like asking about your junk.
And
but then
so
you can say, hey, you look great. You look
exactly
great.
I don't know, like the person seems more poised or they seem more confident, right? Whatever they've done, they're feeling more confident.
Yeah.
They're feeling more themselves. They're feeling, so maybe a person's feeling like they want to ask some personal question, but they really need to decenter themselves and get to the heart of it. And what they're really seeing is, hey, you're looking a lot more confident. You're looking a lot more comfortable. Whatever you're doing that's making you feel good about yourself, just good stuff.
I mean, if there's a listener-supported radio station, it means that people can get daily, every day, a different way of looking at the world. Not just what the corporate media want you to see, but a different picture, different understanding, but a different picture, a different understanding. Not only can you hear it, but you can participate in it. You can add your own thoughts, you know, and you can learn something and so on. Well, that's the way, people become human, you know. That's the way you become human participants in a social and political system.
Hi, this is Dave Harris of Bulky Valley Brewery, Smithers Grind. We have support with the show Suddenly I See to open up conversations about a community that needs to have more conversation about it.
You're listening to Suddenly I See, a gender toolkit for the Smithers, BC area on CICK 93.9 FM. I'm Christine Bruce, and today I'm going solo in the host chair. Joining me for this episode is Reagan Polgar, who's Laszlo's mother. In the first half of this episode, Genderqueer Kids and Transitioning, we talked about what it means to be genderqueer and the social and emotional complications that accompany being genderqueer. Now we're going to turn to the medical complications, particularly around transitioning.
All right, let's go on to medical transition. Now, this to me is a harder topic because I've never had to experience this, but I know that there are lots of people around me who are going through this and making some tough decisions. And whatever their decision is, I need to be supportive of it. Dr. Erchin defines medical transition as strategies that necessarily involve medical professionals, where only surgeries and hormones fall under the medical transition header. Now, they also start this section of the book by pointing out that there are three common misconceptions about transition, and maybe you can help me with these. The first misconception is that transition necessarily involves surgery. Well, no, it doesn't, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You might not ever have surgery.
Yeah.
You might just take hormones.
Yeah.
Right? Or you might just change your gender expression.
Yeah. And that's kind of what it is. Like when we were going through the process with Laszlo and the gender center that we've been working with out of Prince George, when we were working with them, that was their idea exactly, is that we don't jump headfirst into the deep end of the pool. With Laszlo, I wasn't comfortable with him going on to like full hormones until he was a bit older. I learned a lot about hormone blockers. He started taking hormone blockers when he was young. I actually lost a lot of friends and family when I signed off on that. And even had like a little bit of legal stuff happening where people were trying to question my abilities to parent. It was scary. And I was just really grateful that I had this clinic and I had these doctors to talk to, because I'll be honest, like before all of that happened, I had felt the same way. Like I had heard all the scaremongering, I had heard all the propaganda, and I was like, oh, this is going to ruin and he could never come back from this. And what a permanent decision to make. And then the more I learned about it, I was like, it's 100% not permanent at all. He can be on hormone blockers as long as he wants. And if he changed his mind, you just go off of them and your body catches back up.
The body's pretty amazing.
Yeah, like it literally doesn't, there's nothing permanent about hormone blockers. They only work for as long as you're taking them. We did the hormone blockers and we're just going to start slow. We started, we looked at like name change options. We cut his, well, he'd had short hair for a long time. I'd never been gender conforming with them. Like even when they were little kids, I'd be out rolling them around in their stroller and I would put them in little onesies. Do you know those Halloween onesies? Mm-hmm. I started putting them in Halloween onesies all the time, all through fall, winter, whatever, because you could just throw it on over top of whatever they're wearing. And it's super warm for Canadian winters and they loved dressing up in their outfits. So I never had to fight them getting out the door. It was great, right? Like I felt like I was winning. And then it also came with this added satisfaction of like people looking into their little strollers and being like, oh, are they boys or girls? I'm like, well, clearly it is a dinosaur and a pumpkin. Like,
yes.
I'm like, I don't know what you're not seeing with your own eyes. And honestly, every once in a while, somebody would get huffy. Most people just thought it was hilarious. Most people had the exact reaction that you had. They're like, touche.
I had a daughter first, like, and she got given a whole bunch of pink stuff. Right? Yeah. And then I had a son. And I still have all this pink stuff, so he's wearing it. And people, you're such a bad mother. And I don't see how I'm a bad mother. He's warm, right? He's comfortable, you know.
Oh, isn't that always the way, too?
It's a color.
Just as a weird side thing, too. It's always been so funny to me that, like, if you were to put your daughters in, like, boy clothes, everybody's like, oh, that's so cute, she's acting boy. And you put your son into girl clothes, and you're like, oh, you're abusive. I'm like, is it abusive to be a woman? Is it abusive to dress like a girl?
Yeah, you're making girls sound like they're not a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, like the gender clinic was very big on like you go in very slowly. So you start with, with name changes. You start with changing the way that you dress. And like with Laszlo, that was already easy because he already was sort of dressing however he wanted. And then you do hormone blockers. And then after a bit, you can talk about going on to testosterone or going on to estrogen. And then you see how you feel, because there's a lot of people that get to that stage. And once they have that hormone balance, they don't have that gender dysphoria anymore. They don't have that angst anymore. They don't feel like they're not themselves. That's enough. And now they can have this confidence to just start expressing themselves and being comfortable with things. Some people do need more than that, right? Yeah. But like, that is everybody's own personal journey to figure out for themselves.
And if you do it slowly, it gives you opportunities. Yeah, right? That's really smart.
Yeah, because if you go really quick, well, with any of us making like any kind of a large decision, like if you were making a decision to buy a house even, you don't want to be making that decision over a weekend. I think we need to allow some people, like some of us like making decisions more slowly. That's how we feel confident about it. And I think there needs to be room for all different kinds of people. It's our versatility that keeps us really strong and flexible. And right. So I really want to keep that within us as a community and as a collective.
Right. So the next transition is that it necessarily involves only one surgery. And that's another misconception. You might not have any surgeries. Mm-hmm. You might only have one, but you could have multiple surgeries mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you could change the way your face mm-hmm. is aligned mm-hmm. to make it less masculine mm-hmm. or make it more masculine. Mm-hmm. You could change the way your hairline. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many things you can do to change your gender expression.
Yeah. Well, and I think they actually call it gender confirming surgery. Because it's not so much about expression, it's about confirming for yourself. It's making you feel like, yes, this is me. This is when I look in the mirror, I see who I am. And back again to like, cis people do this too. There are men that get Adam's apple surgeries. There are men that get shoulder surgeries. There are men that get jawbone things. There's a whole movement right now of teenage boys online biting on these things to pop out the muscles in their jaws so that they can have these like big jaws and whatnot, because it helps them feel confirmed in their gender. That's exactly the same thing. The only reason we see it as something different is because we're othering trans people.
Right.
But it is exactly the same thing. It is just a person who is this, and this is confirming it for them.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be more complicated than that. No. We just make it more complicated that's right. than that.
Let's simplify. That's a good
right? I'm like, advice. It's gender confirmation surgery. And lots of people get this, not just trans people. In fact, I do believe that most gender confirmation surgeries are on cis people.
Interesting.
I think by a pretty big percent.
Well, they certainly have an easier time getting the surgery.
Well,
right?
And people don't.
People are more accepting.
Cast them
of that.
Outside the circles about it either.
They get accepted.
I want it to be at that point for all of us.
For everybody.
Because that's gender confirmation for them too.
Yeah.
Right? And it's the same. This is what I'm saying. It's the same thing. It doesn't need to be a bigger deal than that. It could just be like, well, you know what? Good for you. I'm really glad you did that for yourself because you look great, alive, and you just clearly are radiating that you feel good about yourself. And isn't that great?
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know if I understand this third one. So maybe mm-hmm. you will understand this third misconception is that there's a single surgery that all transgender men and all transgender women seek out. I don't think I understand that. Why would there be a single one?
A single surgery that they all seek out?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I understand that either. I can't think of a surgery.
Well, that's a funny misconception to have.
Yeah, because like I think that possibly it's maybe dated information, because like there was a time not that long ago where the only way to be able to transition legally was to have these surgeries.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, wow, that's really limiting, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
Talk about imposing your will on somebody else.
Right? Could you imagine the anti-maskers and they're like, you can't make me wear a mask. I'm like, yeah, imagine if somebody was making you have a surgery. That's crazy, right?
No
like,
kidding.
You should have the freedom to decide that for yourself. This is your body. You should have bodily autonomy. That should be up to you,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So I'm wondering if that might be dated information, if that might be like from this time where you sort of had to transition. And once you had medically transitioned to a certain amount, then you could change your sex legally on government documents, whereas that's no longer needed. And since it's been no longer needed, the amount of people that have medically transitioned has drastically reduced. Even to the people who are having fears of people jumping into surgeries and stuff like that, I'm like, well, then make sure you don't make it mandatory, because then it can actually be their choice and it can actually be up to them.
And there's also the point to be made that sometimes the medical profession can make even the most basic medical interactions challenging mm-hmm. when they bring their own bigoted attitudes to it. I think Lazo's told me a few times that they go into the emergency and that there are attitudes to, they bring in, well, you're genderqueer and so that's why you're having these problems or we're dismissive. I don't understand.
Yeah.
What? But then, of course, they're human beings, and so why would I expect like perfection?
Never really underestimating the power of denial.
Yeah.
One of the things that I definitely saw is that he goes in, he has other medical things, and this is not something new. This isn't something that's tied to the gender stuff. This is like family stuff. Like there's other people in the family who have had these exact issues throughout their lives. Like my nana is one of them. I'm saying lucky in the most sarcastic way possible, because I'm like, oh yeah, I had a couple of these issues. My mom had a couple of these issues. My nana had a couple of these issues, and he's just been lucky and gotten all of them. He just
jackpot.
I know. I was like, when it came to like medical problems, it wasn't like Pokemon. You didn't need to collect them all, kid. He's so strong. He really puts his best foot forward, and he really goes out there. But yeah, like being trans on top of that, there's that denial where there's like people kind of want to believe like the kind of people that are bigots about it. Some of the preconceived notions that they have is that he's like making this up for attention. So then they also like put that into with his medical stuff that, oh, he must be making this medical stuff up for attention because he's this attention seeker. And then there's the flip side of it. Because they have this preconceived notion, they'll be like, oh, he's just seeking attention. And it's almost like they kind of try to humiliate him the way that some of the people have talked. Not everybody. There are definitely doctors that are better, but they're clearly bigots as well, right? Yeah. So like we said, you can find crappy people in any community. You can find crappy people in the medical community too. But
that puts his health at risk.
It does. And then there's things like, I feel like there's been a couple times where they didn't believe him. Like he would come in and saying like, oh, well, I'm having this problem. They don't believe him. So they do this like invasive check. And I've had the exact same problem and they didn't do that check for me. They just believed me. So they believed me, got me booked in to see people who could like help me with it, got me on medication in the meantime, and we just went forward. Whereas with him, they did this invasive thing to check if he actually was having this issue, saw he's actually having this issue, and then just said, we're not going to do anything for you, and checked him out.
Does that not become both illegal and unethical though? But what can you do, right?
What can you do about it?
You're already in a power imbalance.
Yeah. The medical community being passive aggressive, it's giving them that plausible deniability.
Like that's where having a second opinion really helps.
Oh, but yeah, absolutely.
It's hard in a small community.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, fortunately, we also do have like my mom. My mom has a lot more privilege than I do and a lot more standing in the community than I do. And she's seen how much I was struggling to help with all of this stuff. And I went to her.
It takes a lot of courage to stand up for somebody like this.
It does. And so my mom has seen me with struggle with that. And I'm, you know, coming to her scared because I'm like, I don't want, like, he's going to be dealing with his own things. I'm dealing with my own things. And I feel like the two of us together is just making it worse. And so she's wonderfully stepped in and been helping a lot with that, so that when he goes to the hospital and stuff, now she's going with him. And it's a completely different, like, just having that, just having this person who's inside, who's very inside that protective circle and has that privilege and is taking that privilege and extending it over Laszlo like a blanket. And immediately we're seeing different treatment. Immediately we're seeing that, like, when a doctor is starting to be invasive, another doctor steps in. And so,
I think privilege helps a lot. And Laszlo and I have talked about that, but it's really good to have this specific example of it, mm-hmm. because then people can see that, well, actually does happen. It is a reality for people in everyday life.
You extending your privilege protection to one person will mean other people who are privileged will start doing that as well.
That's how we give each other courage.
It is. Yeah.
You know what? Let me just say, Reagan, I really appreciate your coming and speaking to us on Suddenly I See, because your perspective is unique. I can ask Laszlo for their perspective all day long, and it's fabulous. But to have that extra perspective of the mother watching the child deal with these situations. You've got a perspective that Laszlo can't share. Sometimes it's too awkward for Laszlo to share. Sometimes it's too uncomfortable to share. Mm-hmm. And sometimes Laszlo doesn't see it objectively.
Yeah.
But you see it and you've got passion about it. Mm-hmm. And so thank you for being brave enough to come and give us that perspective. It's really important.
Well, thank you.
And that's it for the first part of Genderqueer Kids in Transitioning on Suddenly I See on CICK 93.9 FM in the Smithers, BC area. In the next episode, Reagan will return to discuss the political complications that are becoming apparent across North America, as well as a quick conversation on media representations. I'd like to give a special thank you to Laszlo's mom, Reagan Polgar, for joining me today and sharing her perspective. It takes a lot of courage to speak out. We want to hear from you. How did Reagan's perspective affect you? Call the CICK station at 250-847-8769 and leave a message. Or email us at cick_suddenlyic@gmail.com. See you in a couple of weeks, Wizzy.